Moto America fans, it's time for another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you may even learn something from this unlikely pair and their special guest. The mic is yours, Paul and Sean.
Hey, Moto America fans, we are fresh off our first race weekend of the year at Daytona International Speedway. And so this is our first post-Daytona podcast of 2024, and I'm joined by our communications manager, Paul Carruthers. And we're also joined by a guy that I'm telling you, he transcends three eras of basically professional road racing in America. And I'm not trying to date you, Hawk Mazzotta, but...
But you did.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't...
Just to think, bud.
Yeah. But it's cool because, you know, for one thing, I remember years ago when I was at Mid-Ohio, and I remember the PA announcer saying Hawk Mazzotta over the PA. And I remember thinking, you know, there was a guy in the NFL named Max Strong, and I always thought that guy had the greatest name in the NFL. Well, Hawk Mazzotta is one of the best names in American road racing, or any road racing for that matter. And it's your real name. It's not like a nickname. Your dad gave that to you, right?
He did.
Yeah. And you're in Northern California, right? You're from that part of the country, which is a little more, how do I put it? Not really rural, but a little more sort of down to earth and to, you know, you guys work with your hands for a living up there, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to say it's pretty old school up here. You know, we are where most people don't think California exists. You know, it's sort of like Sacramento and San Francisco. That's it. Well, there's still a lot more California. I'm like 2 hours north of Sacramento, and it's beautiful. You know, it's just sort of old school. And yeah, it's all sort of ag and farming, and it's pretty beautiful place. You know, I'm stoked and fortunate to be up here. I grew up here, moved away, and came back for a career years ago. But yeah, I love it up here.
So the first place I think I would have known you from is Sears Point. Is that right? And right in 250s or no?
Yeah, 125. Sears Point. Attaboy. Yeah, everyone too, yeah, Sonoma. Sears Point. Yeah. Yeah, 125s. I raced 125s. It's sort of what I started on, and that would have been the Sears Point days. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you raced 250s for that. You raced in that cup against Alex Gobert. And yeah. Was Corey West part of that group then too?
I didn't race against Corey. He might have been. I only did the one race. That was in 1999 at Laguna Seca.
And Hopper was part of that.
Yeah, John Hopkins, yeah. Smoked all of us. Yeah, it was Hopper and Alex Gobert, myself. There was a whole crew of guys. And Greg White was in, or supposed to be in. I think he crashed himself out. But
that
was a neat deal.
I did the one at Road Atlanta.
No way.
They had a journalism deal there, you know, with the race was within a race, but all I wanted to do was not get lapped, and I didn't. So I was pretty pumped.
Good for you. There are some fast guys in it. That was sort of like the, again, I went to Laguna Seca, but it was like a handful of rounds, and the winner got to go to Europe and you got $5,000. I mean, it was legit.
It was legit.
It was pretty cool. So there's some fast guys in it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's fascinating about you, Hawk, and I don't know if this was maybe a crossroads or a turning point of some sort for you early in your career, but you, in 2000, you were with Arion Racing, and I think Josh Hayes was your teammate, wasn't he?
Yeah, I had an incredible opportunity, yeah, to ride with Arion, and Josh, back then God, the sport was so strong in that class, but yeah. Josh Hayes, and there was Curtis Roberts as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause I crashed his motorcycle actually in testing. then there was like the satellite team with one of the Goberts and.
Yeah. Alex.
Was Alex. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
Was that Bruce Transportation or not?
Yeah. Bruce Transportation. Yep. That's right. The yellow bus team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I get Roger Hayden raced for them for a little bit. Yeah.
Rog rode for them. And yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So that year, 2000, You were just fresh off Daytona and you had a pretty decent round there. So just to bring people up to date, you raced last year in King of the Baggers and in Super Hooligan. This year you're focused in Super Hooligan and you're actually racing with Roland Sands Designs on the FDR 1200. And you had a pretty good result at Daytona. I want to go back though and talk about that 2000 Daytona. Didn't you get hurt at Daytona that year? And can you tell what happened? What was the deal there?
Yeah, that was my first pro race, you know, so I'd started racing in 98 on little 125s and did that 250 Aprilia deal in 99. That was, I guess that was my first legitimate professional race. And then, yeah, I had this opportunity to go race with Arion on a 600. Back then it was called 600 Super Sport, and went to Daytona and yeah, I got taken out. I got taken out on the back straightaway. You know, a racing incident, the guy I was racing with, I think just got too close in the draft, you know, wind direction change. I don't know how he did it, but he just, yeah, tucked in down the back straightaway and I went over the handlebars. You know, got sort of jacked up, went to the old Halifax, been there a few times, but, so that was it. That was the only race I did was Daytona. By choice, you know, I didn't grow up doing the sport. You know, right. I come from just a normal background. I played football and lacrosse and grew up on a cattle ranch in the middle of nowhere and just got into it and I loved it, but I definitely didn't grow up doing it. And I really was still figuring out what I wanted to do. Did I want to try to pursue this as a career? And I loved it, but that was my moment where, you know, I got hurt and went home and was sort of thinking, all right, what do I do? I was at that age too, going to college and, you know, just a lot of options and time to think. So, that was it. That was sort of the long hiatus of my career.
Yeah. And then of course, but since then you were involved in motorcycle. Well, you have the school, you still have the school, I believe. So you've always been around motorcycling and obviously you've gotten back into it in a racing sense. Tell us about what it is in you that made you decide to have a school, and it's kind of focused on younger people, isn't it? More than anything.
Yeah. I've become known to work with the children, really, you know, which I'm stoked on. It just happened that way. But yeah, I mean, I'm a dad, I've got two kids. I've got a 10-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. I love being a dad. It's the best thing in the world. I love kids. They're our future. It's, you know, I think the need is there for instruction in motorcycle riding, motorcycle racing, period. I think we've all seen that, whether it be driving down the road and you see a guy or a gal on a motorcycle and within 10 seconds, you can say, oh my gosh, that's scary. You know,
yeah.
That person needs help, period. And then they just don't know, which on the street is even more scary to me that there's such a need. And with these kids, especially where I'm at, we're in a rural country area. And so there's a lot of land. So a lot of people and kids ride here, whether it be four-wheelers, motorcycles, but it's a lot of just backyard riders and parents don't know unless they ride. They just put these kids on these bikes that are weapons and it's sort of scary, you know? So, my now wife, then back in 2015, girlfriend was the one that really pushed me into this. Honestly, I have been building homes since high school, and I was a firefighter. I've been an EMT. I've been cowboying and running ranches really in the past lot of years. I've just done a lot that, I'm just sort of that kind of guy. Maybe it's a downfall, but I'm pretty just, I see something, I read something and I want to do it and I do it. And it's led me back into this place where I am. So the real short of the long is I met my wife. I was running 3 ranches, growing hay and cowboying, running cattle, mainly just fixing crap that's broke all the time. That's being a cowboy, you know, and, she's a veterinarian. So she came to a call for, a horse on the ranch that was caulking and, ended up having to put the horse down, but that's how I met my wife. And, with meeting her, I went and did a local supermoto race after not touching a bike since 2010 at all. And I loved it. I won. And she just said, Hawk, you need to do that. You're good at it, but mainly like you're really happy. You're a better boyfriend when you're doing it.
That's so good.
If you're happy, I see that thing in your eyes. So she pushed me sort of back into riding, and I'm glad she did, because I love it. I just love riding motorcycles, period. And in 2019, sort of, it was like this enough's enough of so many people and parents at school. Hey, how do I get my kid into riding? Because they know that I ride and always had my boy riding. And so we formed a business in 19. So that turned into a couple years of teaching a lot of others. I mean, thousands of students have come through, which has just been phenomenal. And trying to make that my only business. I've still been building homes sort of fighting fires and doing all sorts of stuff. But now that's it. That's what I've focused on. And Corey West actually is the one that got me into racing. So he stopped through my place in, I think it was 21, on his way north to Castle Rock to go race a hooligan race, a dirt track race. And he and Patricia stopped off, and it was great to see them. And he just mentioned, hey, do you want to race a bagger? And I said, no, heck no, I don't. I didn't even know what bagger racing was, really. I wasn't following racing much. But yeah, that's how it started, was a phone call to a guy who was looking for a bagger racer, and I'm racing again. It was really just a potential marketing tool for me, for my business. And, you know, I love riding and racing, and, if I could maybe get paid to do it. And so here we are, I'm racing again.
So the super hooligan classes really was the perfect place for you to land though, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's just amazing. Just the hooligan of it, man, it's wild. There's so many manufacturers. It's a really neat thing that allows a wide, variety of racers, if you will, to get into pro racing. You know, you've got a bit of all walks of life, which I love, and all skill levels and all the different bikes. And they're wild looking and sounding, and it's so cool, you know. And last year, getting on the Chief for Roland, the old Indian Chief, that was a neat intro for me to get on into the hooligan class. And with Roland, I just think the world of Roland and that whole crew, they're just incredible group of humans and bike builders. And that led into a lot of hard work this off season to where I am now with being on an incredible bike, incredible team.
Yeah. I mean, that FTR 1200 is just an absolute weapon. There's no doubt, especially in that class. It's perfect for that, wouldn't you say?
It is. Yeah. The bike's.
Yeah. It's funny. That is such a tangible class for fans. I mean, the whole look of it, you know, people that ride motorcycles, they can kind of relate to it a little bit. I mean, I'm not saying it's sport bikes you can, or the king of the baggers you can't, but it's a kind of thing where, you know, I never raced, I could never race, but I feel like I could ride that thing around the track at least, you know. It feels like it's somewhat tangible and understandable. Plus, there's so many brands, there's 12 of them in that class. And it's crazy how, you know, everything from a BMW Airhead to, you know, Yamaha's got their bike in there. Now you got your Indian. And I mean, these Pan Americas, the Harley Davidsons did really well at Daytona, and their air cooled engine. Those are liquid cooled, I think, aren't they? I'm pretty sure they are. Yeah, that's right. But anyway, it's so cool to see what's going on. Plus, obviously, Stefano Mesa has the Energica electric bike, which kind of caught him out when you guys had that red flag. I guess he couldn't charge up his bike for that first race.
So what happened. Yeah, bummer. Yeah.
That's what happened. He didn't have enough juice to go in the second go on it. So, but how did you feel about your Daytona? You did pretty decent, I thought.
Yeah, fifth and seventh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was a good start. Always wanting more as a racer, period. But we had goals going into it. I had my personal goals, and with the team, you know, the overall goal with the boys was, hey, we all know Daytona it's hard on bikes. It's hard on riders. It's just a lot, that place. And you always want to go, just get in and get out with points. That was our goal, is, you know, be smart, learn the bike, is my first race weekend on the motorcycle. And I knew the class was stacked this year. I looked at it coming into it, and I had my my plan of session one, I knew it was going to be go time. You're going to have to get up to speed really fast. I had my lap times I wanted to meet session one. And I had, of the way I looked at it, there was 12 riders that really are talented that could potentially be on the podium. That's the way I saw it. A lot of them I've never raced against, but I've watched or I've known of them. And so with that said, yeah, it was get in and get points, and, you know, it set some goals. And in like talking with Pridmore, he's a guy who I've known a long time, and he's an incredible guy to bounce things off of and speak to. And he's a realist, and he's very methodical, of course. So he's a guy that's that calming guy to say, hey, Hawk, let's be real. Let's set goals. And you've been out of the sport forever. And so anyways, we meet and surpassed our goal, which is great. But still, you know, I was this close to running with the lead pack. I just could not get a drive on the banking. I mean, They'd pull me three or four bike lengths, and that's
everything there, right?
That was it. You know, I mean, it wasn't nothing about the team or the motorcycle. I just was missing setup a little bit. I was just spinning all the way up the banking, and they were driving. So I'd watch these guys that was it. It's like, God dang it, you know, but it was fun, man. I had a good time. The bike's amazing. The team's amazing. I'm just the word for me that weekend and this whole season, I mean, really is just grateful. I'm just so stoked to be in this position. What an opportunity with the team and the bike and my sponsors. And I sort of can't believe I'm 42 and back in the sport and have the opportunity I do. It's incredible.
So Hawk, tell us about that bike at Daytona those bikes in that class. I mean, aerodynamics is so important at Daytona. Those bikes really don't have any aerodynamics. So, I mean, you have to kind of crawl under the paint somehow. Do you feel it around the banking? And how's your neck? I mean, did you definitely deal with some discomfort of running that thing around 31 degree banking at those speeds?
Yeah, there's no aero on them.
Right.
So yeah, you definitely have to be mindful of every body part and really try to tuck in and try different things. That's what I found myself doing. You know, I'm not a big guy, but I guess for motorcycle racing, you know, I'm on the taller side, and I was really studying the guys in front of me and trying different things. You know, I was with, of course, the talent's amazing, you know, the Indian boys, the Harley boys, they've been in this game a long time, and they've all ridden the Harley 1200 class, and they've ridden almost everything. So I pay attention, study other guys my first session right away. You know, O'Hara's out there with the elbows straight and flat. Other guys are tucked in. And so I really study and I try different stuff, which is so cool about Daytona is that, you know, in a session, I tuck in behind the boys and I'd try elbows out, and it really would change things from this to, you know, back and elbows in and knees out versus, you know, elbows inside of knees versus out of knees. And it's really cool is that with no fairings or anything, you feel everything a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, head flat. I've got my dash is right here. So I can't get as flat as I wanted, like my chin on the tank. I had to sort of duck my head to the side so I could see.
Wow.
So I just played with things, and yeah, you know, I feel like you always feel it at Daytona. You know, my neck definitely felt it a bit, but I train pretty hard. I feel like I'm in decent shape that I just had to find that comfortable area to really tuck in and just try to relax, you know, at Daytona.
So tell me about that, your part of the country a little bit. I want to ask you about this. There's some things that a lot of you guys have in common. Shalina Moreira lives in Petaluma, I believe, and she has a dairy farm. You've been on ranches, and you're from north of that area as well. You know, Rich Oliver is Fresno area, a little bit further south, but he has a school. So, and the Bostroms are from Petaluma, and you're real close friends with Ben. What is it about that part of the country? Is it just the topography that suggests that, you know, it's, you guys are people that are outdoors and do outdoor things, and with your business of building homes, is the housing market pretty good up there?
Yeah. So to answer the first part, I can say, just speaking for myself, that, growing up the way I did and where I did formed me as a human being, period. And I'm so thankful for getting to grow up on a ranch. We grew up about an hour, a little over an hour out of town, out of Redding. So out of the city. And we lived in the city as well. But, you know, the ranch was, that was, it was my brother and I, or brothers and I, and we were on almost 5,000 acres of,
wow.
We ran cattle, man. It was like, you know, a playground, period. And it was a lot of just adapt and overcome and figure stuff out, you know? From a young age, yeah, we were on motorcycles, dirt bikes. They were a tool. They weren't.
Yes.
They were I think we had a little XR80 and a DRZ, whatever was around, we rode, and we knew nothing about riding, period. You know, like pops, our dad, he was an athletic guy, and he would drive anything, ride anything, and he'd teach you. There was no beyond that instruction. Maybe you had your cowboy boots and your hat. And sometimes it's like, hey boys, put on a helmet. If you're going to the way back, wear a helmet, take a knife. And you always had a gun on you, always a rifle and a scabbard or a pistol. I mean, it was amazing, period. Hmm. It was incredible because, you know, my brother and I would go out way out back and we'd get into so much trouble. It was ridiculous. Like, and you didn't have phones, you know, you didn't have anything, which was what was so special about it. Now, I mean, to think my 10-year-old going out, we were that age or younger, way out back. I would trust him, but at the same time, if he had a brother or something, maybe, but man, it was no joke. You know, we would get stuff stuck and we'd drive an old little Toyota and get it stuck and hung up. And we had mountain lions, we had wild boar, we had bear, wow. We had everything that it was truly elements to deal with, but you always figured it out. You know, you didn't dare get something stuck and not hike back and then hike back the next day, low pro, and try to get it out before you're like, hey dad,
right, everything's stuck.
No way. You didn't mention that because you were getting tuned up, you know? Right. So growing up, back to, I guess, sort of answer it, growing up the way we did, and maybe like the Bostrom boys and Shalina on the dairy, I've been to her dairy. You just, you're outdoors with nature and animals and the elements. And so I know we just had an appreciation for life in a way that maybe so many don't, because they weren't given the opportunity. We're just blessed to have had the opportunity to grow up the way we did and have to figure stuff out, build things, rig things. You know, if we got in trouble, it was, you go pick rock, period. You'd go out in the pasture and we would pick rock. We had the most flawless pastures, man. It was,
you were in trouble a lot.
Not by choice, you know, like we'd go irrigate and, you know, rotate the valves. It was hard. It was hard stuff, but it was awesome, you know? So we knew how to work with our hands and the summertime here is brutal. It's 100 to 110 and you'd go pull weeds. You'd go do stuff that was not fun, but we had work ethic, and that's carried out through all my careers, period. You know, our parents worked hard. My dad was one of the hardest working guys ever. And he instilled that of, if you want it, get it, period. You know? And so, I think that's why maybe the people up here, or, you know, the Rich Olivers, I've been to Rich's place and he's one of those guys, man. He's a hard worker. He's methodical. He, you know, you're out in the country, you just make stuff happen, you know?
Now I feel like a wuss for growing up in Southern California.
But you got it down there too, though. It's just different though. You know, there's the parts of it that, I mean, I just, like I was telling Paul when we were getting on, like I still have AOL. Point is, it's like for me to be on here right now, I was stoked that I figured out how to get on Zoom.
That's really good. Like, yeah.
I'm not a techie guy. And there's a lot of not being maybe as much in the cities or not wanting to grasp all of the modern day. It's been a hindrance in my careers too. You know, like a lot of building, I could have learned computer programs to help me in building. And I just didn't do it. I sort of refused. Or, you know, the firefighting stuff, or right now with my business, I've literally been researching today. How do I get, when people Google my moto camp, does it pop up and all this? I should know all this by now. And I don't, my website, I need to fix it. And I, you know, so there's that part that I probably would have known a lot more of if I had maybe put myself in the position or finished college with certain things, but I just didn't want to, honestly, you know.
Tell us about your relationship with Ben Bostrom. It's amazing how similar you are to him. I mean, it's like you're his brother, pretty much, or Eric's brother. You're the fourth. There are three of them, right? So you're the fourth Bostrom, I think.
There's three. Where's there? Yeah,
Ben, three, Eric, and then the dad. Yeah, is it Tristan? I think. Yeah,
these guys, yeah, man. I you know what? I got some great stories with those guys, but we just hit it off, honestly. Ben and Eric both. We've shared some pretty incredible experiences together, and they actually were born and raised up here in Reading, where I was born.
Oh, okay.
And I think they spent most of their childhood in and or outside of, I should know, but the Bay Area, at their ranch there. But yeah, I met them back in maybe 98 or 99, and we just sort of hit it off and stayed in touch over all these years. You know, it's pretty funny is that I've got some pretty cool pictures that we've been sharing with each other as of recent, and in Daytona in 2000 was the first time it happened, and it was so good. But, we were in Daytona, and back then, you know, the cool thing was like the spiky hair and
yeah,
bleached or black or, you know, all that stuff. And I think we both had black spiked hair. We were standing next to each other. And I had a group of people come up to me and be like, Ben, can I get your autograph? And,
yeah, of course.
And he's right here. And he looked at me, he's like, yeah, dude. So it's super not cool. You know, really wasn't cool, but he gave me the old wink. And so, you know, I signed and took some photos. He's like, yeah, dude, that's awesome. And I mean, we just, we have similar, I think, you know, past, you know, experiences as children, and we just get along really well. I worked at the Skip Barber Superbike School with Eric at Laguna Seca so we had a lot of time together at that, and so we got to ride together a ton and just get some good times together, and we've just done all sorts, you know, and stayed in touch over the years.
So a message to collectors out there, don't buy any Ben Bostrom autographs.
that was one time. That was one time. It was in the year 2000 at Daytona. So maybe
stay away from those.
Yeah. The signature looks a little goofy. Maybe it was just, you know, a couple.
You know, there's another person I didn't mention. Jason Uribe is also a firefighter. So you have that in common too. So that's another thing from that part of the country. You know, obviously there's a lot of countryside up there and you guys always worry about the wildfires and everything, but is that why you got involved in firefighting, to try to help out with that whole thing?
No, I mean, it didn't start that way. I mean, of course, yes, but no, mine was pretty simple. Again, it's sort of my hasty decision-making in my life of, I want to do this, but no, mine started actually in Daytona in 2010. I was racing, I think it was like the Daytona 8-hour.
Oh,
thing. Boy, I was in Daytona.
Yeah. Super teams or something like that.
Gosh, I don't even DMG back then.
DMG. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It was the second year of DMG.
It was an 8-hour race, and I was on a Ducati, teamed up with great guys. I can't even think right now who it was, but anyways, I actually got I got T-boned by Kyle Wyman. He lost his brakes going into left-hander, going on the banking. So turn six, I got T-boned, and I think he got banged up pretty bad. He hit the wall. And I was all right. I just got a little banged up. But anyways, they load me up in the box, the ambulance. And that was just that moment for me. I was like picking the medic's brains. And
oh, wow.
That was it. I was like, I want to do what you guys do, period. I want to be on the giving end, not the receiving end. I just thought, I've always thought it was really neat, you know, firefighting and medics and all that stuff. It's just super cool. Or even veterinarians, all that. I just think is neat. So that was it. I finished out. I got to Laguna Seca. I was riding for Aussie Dave Racing, and we made it up through Laguna. that was my last race. And I literally had already signed up for Fire Academy. They're in Monterey. So I went through the Monterey Academy and EMT school. And so 6 months later, I was graduated the academy and became an EMT, was signed up for medic school, you know, taking anatomy and physiology and all that was my next step, and got all these rescue classes, confined space in Swiftwater. And I'd done everything possible. So, cause it was really hard to get hired back then as a firefighter, very competitive. So that's why I really just had an interest and moved back up here from Monterey to be a firefighter. That's what back up here. I took a job for Cal Fire and, that's what brought me back up. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Now I misspoke. I think it was called Moto ST. That's when Jay Springsteen, I think, was racing, and Jimmy Felice and his son. And yeah, that was right. Is that right?
Yeah. Nines. I raced against them. I raced a twin. I was on like a SV 650 and we battled with those guys, Jimmy Felice and Springer and his son. And we were on those little bikes, man, battling. It was so much fun.
That's funny. I love it.
Yeah. Into the under the lights, Daytona, in the rain. In the rain.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's the year Heron won it, and it was at nighttime and it was really cold for him. Now, I don't know. You guys raced a long amount of time, so you had to race under the lights for part of it, obviously, right? Yeah. So, and that's man stuff right there, boy. I'll tell you.
It was sure cool. Yeah, that was like Josh Hayes. I mean, there were some names in it, Ulrich, and there was some fast guys that show up and do that thing. And it was fun. You know, it was like, you had so much time to do this. You had to be just really smart. And it was the whole strategy part of like the 200, I guess, you know, I mean, it was really neat.
Okay. So I have to do this one with you. Okay. Hawk Mazzotti, your father was a Falconer. So you were named obviously because you weren't named Falcon. You were named Hawk. Let's put it that way. But as I understand it, the young man, Mr. Euclid Hayes, whose middle name is Hawk, and he goes by the name Hawk. Did you have influence on that?
I think so. I mean, you'd have to ask him, but yeah, I
that's cool.
I think I did. You know, Josh is an incredible, and Mel, they're just amazing people. I've known Josh for a lot of years. He's been very helpful in the ins and outs of my career. And yeah, we had sort of spoke about it, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat. You know, that little wild guy, pretty
cool. Yeah. It's a good compliment.
It is absolutely. Yeah. Whether it's me or not, I think it was, but I'm honored, you know, it's pretty cool.
I guess he never thought of Sean or Paul.
No, you know, it could have been the same number of letters. I mean, it wouldn't have been hard, but no, Hawk last year. So I have to ask you this last year. So I went over to see Josh in Squid Hunters area, and one of their bikes said Hawk on it. Do you know why that is?
Maybe for his kid.
I don't think it was because of his son. Well, I thought it was you.
Was it? Well, maybe it was my Hawk Mazzotti Motocamp sticker, possibly.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I mean, Josh, this guy, you know, he's such a legend and he's so down to earth, humble. He's like, hey, give me some of your stickers. Put them on the bike.
Yeah, he's helpful too. What? You know, it's just
It's really. He's like, yeah, man. You know, he supports what I do, and you know, Peter, the owner. He's
Peter.
Mine, and these guys are so. Yeah, I got some stickers, and they put them on the underside of the tail section. You know.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Cool. I got some pictures actually at at Daytona. I have Josh on the grid, and I got a couple pictures. Like, you know. My business, my logo is on Josh Hayes' bike. It's so cool, you know.
That's really cool. Yeah, I knew it had something to do with that. I just didn't know so it was yours. It was your sticker. He said it was, but I didn't quite understand what the connection was there. So when you teach little kids, you must have pretty good patience, and you've got young kids yourself. So how young do you start them, and what are they on? I mean, they're not on Stasic bikes. They're on bigger bikes than that, obviously.
And Stasic. So the youngest that I've worked with, and I have worked with a couple years now, is 2 years old. It's amazing. The for a little 2-year-old human being to be able to retain much of anything with that much motor skill, you know, I would say I've got patience, but I don't, honestly. I've got patience because it's what I do. You know, I have to have patience. I love children. I love working with children. I love teaching all ages, honestly, and all skill levels. But the children, there's a real need for both safety really a lot of, especially I'd say in our area, we're a lower income area where I live. And there's a lot of crummy stuff going on, I think, in households. So there's really that need for these children to have that outlet, have a healthy outdoor thing that is a bit more, I think it's a bit more lost these days. There's a lot of electronic crap, you know, hey, go play a video game, go watch TV, go on the internet. And I hate it. It's really a bummer. We didn't have that as kids, you know, at all. So, yeah, you know, to work with these children it's challenging. No doubt, you know, there's some kids that really hone in and they listen and they apply. And there's some that have such a short attention span and they don't want to listen, which is fine. You know, I just have to find that creative way to engage them. And I've learned a lot. I'll tell you what, I've sure learned a lot working with all the different students. And I love it and I enjoy it. And yeah, 2 years old, they're on Stasic. So I have a prerequisite before they come to me. I've learned is that you have to, not the 2 year olds, but you have to be able to ride a pedal bicycle before you come get on a motorcycle, you know, any sort of a 50 or anything, because I've learned the hard way, but that's how you get your balance mechanisms, period. And a Strider bike is incredible.
That's a genius, right? I mean, that's changed everything.
It has. The Strider bike, we've got these little tiny, they're riding helmets. You know, there's just this helmet on a little tiny body and they're jamming everywhere. And it really, though, the steps are incredible. My curriculum, I mean, it's a Strider bike, a pedal bicycle, even if it's for 1 hour, they come out and, you know, they want to ride a motorcycle. I'm like, let's put you on a pedal bike. I get them rolling because it's a totally different deal, believe it or not, with the pedaling versus just pushing and gliding. They got that. And then we go to, you know, the 50s. There's all sorts these days, but no training wheels. I don't do it. We don't need them. And the progression is just insane. It really is because of the steps and, you know, it's just brakes and throttle control, period. I just start very slow. I mean, we're talking a couple of feet. So they build their confidence. The worst thing is you get that first taste of it and it's whiskied out into a fence or scared, then they don't want to do it, you know? So the first experience is very mellow. And then, it's off and running. These kids are, they learn fast.
What do you think of our Mini Cup program?
Oh man, it's awesome. It's incredible. You know, we sure didn't have that as kids.
Right.
And these bikes are full blown little race bikes and, you know, the kids are in the full gear. And I mean, it is so cool. And I would like to be much more a part of it, really. Now that I'm back in the sport in Moto America, I think it's incredible and it's needed for our US racers, you know, to progress and go that next level. That's the perfect starting point, I think, combined with dirt. That's the conversation I've had a lot of lately of parents coming to me or track house, you know, these people, hey, what do you think? What's it take to get US riders back overseas dominating? You know, I spoke with Hopkins, I spoke with some people, and it's like my opinion, there's a lot to it. And I'm not the guy to just say, here's how and why, because there's a lot more talent out there than me. But if you look at our US talent, that, you know, the Rainies, all those guys were just dominated. They're all dirt trackers.
That's true.
They were all hardcore flat trackers and they could ride anything. Those guys could ride anything. And I just think that background, you're comfortable sliding, and they had their way of doing it. And partially I can say that I think getting to teach as many kids as I have, There's a lot of softness these days. There really is. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, oh, you got to go easy on them. And everyone gets a trophy. And, you know, that really does affect a mindset moving forward, whether it's mm-hmm. motorcycle racing or school, college, your job, but it does. And I wasn't raised soft. And I can tell you what, when I started racing, I was fortunate to be surrounded by incredible racers. I had amazing opportunity of Freddie Spencer's. I got to go to the Roberts Ranch and train with Curtis and Kenny Jr. and Kenny. And I'll tell you what, I didn't ride much dirt and I went out there and rode 100s, and Junior and Curtis and I were on their little TT track, you know, banging bars. I thought we were hauling ass, you know, we were getting down, and old Kenny would be, you know, in the center of that TT track in his shorts and his cowboy hat and some white tennies. I remember it. And he would hit golf balls at us.
Yeah. There's a lot of softness there.
There was no softness, but I wanted to be as fast as I could be. And I thought I wanted to do as a career, and I didn't care. This guy he'd be like, get off that bike. Let me show you how to do this. And he'd hop on a 100 in his little tennies and shorts and go lay down a hot lap. You're like, holy shit. Wow. He'd be like, that's how you do it. Like, okay, fair enough. Like, you would smoke us, but there was that hardness that I think a lot of these guys grew up with. Maybe it was too hard. Maybe there's that balance, you know, I don't know. I mean, our dad was hard on us, but there's that balance of, if you want to make it to the top and go overseas, these guys are no joke. And these kids are being trained so hard. You've got to be tough mentally and physically. And so I think there's just that balance of a lot of things. You know, we've got the tools these days, the bikes, the gear, the resources, the internet, the technology. And you got to, I think, just combine that with the right minds of a balance of combining dirt and combining that hardcore, like go train hard, but with that balance, still let kids be kids. That's one of the biggest things I can say for my children and all these kids. I see a lot of talent, but I see the parents wanting it way more than the kids.
Yeah.
Doesn't work.
No, yeah. It doesn't. It doesn't.
Break them. You almost, I hate to say it, but you know, like when you break a horse, you're breaking their spirit.
And you are
almost, you know, not, a lot of these parents work so hard and bless them, and for doing all they do for these kids time-wise and financially. And I mean, it's incredible what these parents do. Just, you can't break a kid. You got to let them be children. You're a kid one time. And that, I think, goes a long way of, they want it more if you let them be kids, and then they get to that track and they're like, yeah, I love this. You know?
All right. Yeah. I mean, I always think that, you know, you think about like Cale Yaakov or Rocco Landers. I mean, you know, Dave Yaakov and Stoney both race. So, you know, they want for their kids to race. And I always think, you know, do they really like it? But they really, really like it. And they are really super motivated. I went through that period with my own son, and, you know, he wasn't really that interested in it. So I didn't push him. I wanted him to go his own way. I certainly wasn't going to be one of those helicopter parents. Do you know yet with your kids whether they're going to want to ride? You know, where are they at with that whole thing?
Yeah, my 10-year-old boy, he's all about basketball.
Oh, well, there you go.
Loves it. You know, I've exposed him since he could not even walk. I mean, I've ridden with him and my 1.5-year-old, you know, since they're tiny. I'd ride with him in front of me, strap him to my back. He rides really well, and he's done races that I host. I put on, you know, flat track races and motocross races, and he's done them, and he's really talented. But it wasn't that like, hey, Dad, I want to go race. I want to go do this or that. He enjoys riding and backyard riding and going and camping out riding, which is great. He does what he wants to do. He's done kung fu and football and baseball, basketball, you know, just expose him to everything. And my little girl, she's hardcore. She already, she charges hard, man. She's a little squishy. If you haven't seen her at the track, you will. And I'll tell you what, this thing is just, she's telling me.
Hey, so I think, so look at me. I should have turned the lights on before the sun started to set here. I think I'm actually causing a solar eclipse here in Ohio. So my giant head is blocking the sun. But anyway, hey, Hawk, it's been great to get to know more about you. I've known about you for years and years, and you're terrific. I'm so glad you're back involved with us, and you're a great ambassador for the sport with which you're doing. And, you know, keep it up, and we can't wait to see you at the next Super Hooligan round. So it's been great having you.
Right on, you guys. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I always love watching your guys' shows. And I'm excited to be back in the paddock this year with the Roland Sands boys and Trackhouse behind me. And I think we'll be, I plan on being up in that mix on the podium this year. We're sure as heck gonna try.
I love that. That's great. Well,
it was nice getting to know you a little better, and we'll see you at the races. Thank you.
Thanks. Right on. Thanks, guys.